Welcome to Chest Advocates, the podcast that celebrates the unwavering dedication and remarkable achievements of advocates in healthcare, where a single voice, a single story can make a true impact. Thank you for joining us. Now here is narrator Dr. Drew Harris, editor-in-chief of the Chest Advocates publication, to introduce today's topic.
In the last decade, vaping has replaced smoking as the most common way that young people use tobacco products. The available products, flavors, devices, and marketing practices are rapidly changing. And you are not alone if you find it hard to keep up with the trends. Moreover, the health dangers of vaping in young people are also rapidly emerging. And as a parent and a pulmonologist, I am pleased to introduce you all to Meredith Berkman. Meredith, together with two other moms, founded Parents Against Vaping, a national advocacy and education organization that's powered entirely by volunteers. Over the next 15 minutes, you will hear from Meredith about her experience and how clinicians can help strengthen the fight against the youth vaping epidemic. It all started around her dining room table when Meredith's 16-year-old son came home following a school assembly.
It's a moment I'll never forget. He said, "Mom, Dad, I need to talk to you about something that happened at school today." Now, I have four kids. He's number two, three daughters and a son. I had never heard that from him before, nor since. And so my husband and I, sitting at dinner, were really listening. And he proceeded to tell us about what he referred to as a, quote, mixed message anti-addiction talk at school that day. There had been an outside anti-addiction group was coming in to talk to the kids, and the teachers and administrators leave the room so the kids will speak freely. And that day, as my son Caleb reported to us, this supposed educator started talking to the kids about Juul. Now, I will say that at that time in April of 2018, I don't think I'd ever heard the word Juul. Maybe I'd heard about e-cigarettes, but it was, I would say, for most parents in America, and certainly for me, it was not anything that was on my radar. But every single kid in that room at that point was either addicted to Juul, had tried Juul, or knew someone who was either of those things. And so this man began to tell the kids that Juul was not for them. It was for adults, not kids, he said. But as Caleb reported, he would follow up every conversation by saying, quote, "But it's totally safe. It's not for you kids, it's for adults, but it's, quote, 99.9% safer than traditional cigarettes. It's not for kids, it's for adults, but it's getting FDA approval, quote, any day." And my son, Caleb, being a skeptic, went up to this guy at the end. He started to ask questions. That's when this guy took out his Juul. He showed the boys how it worked, and he called it the iPhone of vapes. As it turned out, within 24 hours, we discovered this was, in fact, a Juul representative that had come into the school without the school's knowledge through this outside group. So over the next few days, once we learned that, we started Googling frantically, and we discovered not only the depraved duplicity of this company that was marketing to not only our kids, but to America's kids on social media platforms where they knew that kids were, but adults were not. But we were also really terrified by what we soon realized was the enormous scope of this vaping issue. We originally decided that we would just create a website. I paid one of my daughter's friends to start a website on, you know, GoDaddy, so that we could tell other parents like us, like, what was happening. We started with this website, and the first night we launched it, we just were inundated with emails from parents who were looking, you know, scouring the internet for something because their kids were so wildly addicted to this thing called Juul that they didn't understand. While we have built a small but mighty team staff to help us do what we do around the country, we remain a volunteer-run and volunteer-powered organization. Again, our parents stand up in hearings and face members of, you know, people who are surrogates for the tobacco industry, paid by the industry, and the PAVE parents can say, "I'm not here because someone is paying me to be here. I'm here because I want to protect children from flavored tobacco and the predatory use of predatory behavior of the tobacco industry." I will never forget some of the other letters that over time that have stayed in my mind was one a while after that from a dad who was outside of DC, and his son had been, I think he was headed, like he'd already been recruited for like an Ivy League baseball team or something. And he described just how his son was so addicted, he could barely function at practice. Like, here's this kid who's like, you know, one of the great athletes of, you know, of his class, of his school, of his town. And he was so addicted. His lungs were so impacted. And the dad was afraid. He didn't know, you know, what was this going to do to his son? What was this doing to his health? In some ways, every story is both unique to that family in the pain that they experience when they have a child who's swept up and gets addicted so quickly to these substances, you know, these nicotine flavored nicotine products, but they're also very universal. There's an enormous amount of pain involved for the family. There is a change in the child's behavior, in the, sometimes in the child's personality. Again, nicotine and the developing brain do not mix. So in addition to, you know, being reprogrammed, this story we've heard so many times, a kid who suddenly was a great student, is like, you know, refuses to go to school. A kid who was always, you know, sweet and kind is now punching walls, or, you know, hitting other kids, or hitting a family member, or stealing money from their parents' purse so they can continue buying these things. These are the stories that we hear and we heard and we continue to hear almost on a daily basis. While there are resources and support services, there is no FDA-approved cessation tool for minors who are suffering from this kind of enormous nicotine addiction. It's very hard. This was a couple of years ago. I got this email. I sometimes the stories are so shocking. At the beginning, you know, I know that I thought, are we being punked? Could this be real? But this woman reached out and said that she had just lost her child. This poor woman had twin boys who at the time, I think maybe were 20 or maybe a little younger, but one of them was so profoundly addicted. They had had asthma when they were younger, but his asthma from the constant juuling was so exacerbated that he had four catastrophic asthma attacks that required hospitalization, but the last one killed him. And we have another family I can think of in Florida where their son had only been, they didn't even know he'd been juuling. He just got very, very sick. He was a cheerleader in high school, and he went off to college. And I think it was the first semester he had come home and he wasn't feeling well. He ended up in the hospital for months and he needed, you know, a double lung transplant. It's been a very rocky road. When they went back to his dorm room, when his parents went back to his dorm room, because it was clear he wasn't going back to school because he was so sick and he was in the hospital. That's when, as they cleared out his room, I think it was his dad found all of these. I believe they were mango and then, you know, back then mango and menthol or mint flavor, but they found all these Juul pods, and that's how they realized that he must have been vaping, and he was, and, you know, he's going to suffer the physical consequences of that for the rest of his life. And again, he had only been doing it for a very short time. You know, the problem is you don't know. The CDC has been very clear about that, but, you know, it's over 2.5 million kids who are vaping regularly. So many of them on a daily basis, suggesting enormous addiction. So this has enormous public health consequences, not only for adolescents now, but for the early adopters of Juul, who, let's say, we call them the class of 2016, these young people who were seniors in high school, went off to college, their parents never even knew before anyone really knew. And they have been using Juul and other flavored vapes with enormous amounts of nicotine, so much more than is in traditional cigarettes, for years and years. Right now, we're just trying to educate parents, to educate themselves, and to how to communicate with their kids to keep younger kids from starting, and hopefully get the kids who are using these products to want to quit and then get them help to do so. You know, there are still clinicians who maybe aren't as aware of how harmful these products are or how pervasive the problem is. So I think, you know, it's really important for clinicians to ask patients and young patients in particular, if they vape, if they see a patient who seems to be struggling with a lung illness and it's a child and it doesn't seem to make sense. I hope they are not only ask those questions, are you vaping, but also report those cases, and code them correctly. Of course, I don't know off the top of my head what the code is, but make it really clear so that they're still, that people will be able to track. Ultimately, we're trying to change laws so that there are no more sales of flavored tobacco products to protect kids. Having physicians, clinicians, who are willing to, testify at these hearings or are willing to join us. It's always really important for the people who can really articulate the science of why what we're advocating for really matters for public health. It's always necessary to have people who can stand up and face the tobacco industry and say, you're doing real harm to kids, to always ask the right question of young people, and to report if you're seeing someone who's having seizures because of using these flavored nicotine products, to report that to FDA and encourage the families to report those cases, and then to advocate, when and how you can, and help groups like ours, educate parents so that parents can protect their kids and educate themselves and their kids so that they won't be using tobacco products. In fact, one of the things that our group was very focused on is pushing. And we know, the federal government is an enormous sprawling bureaucracy and it can take a really long time for change. But we had been pushing for a while, and that the NYTS would be asking kids, are you using iced flavors? Because an iced flavor, and those are among the most popular flavors that youth are having access to and are using, iced flavors are mentholated flavors, but they weren't asking about iced flavors last couple of years until this past year. So the 2023 survey, which is just, the results are just coming back probably, and we won't know until later in the fall. Our feeling has been all along, and we made this case, we talked to the people who write those questions, and, it takes so long to get questions added, et cetera. The youth use of menthol e-cigarettes, as separated for the moment from menthol cigarettes, is likely so much higher than reported. Because if you say to a kid, are you using a menthol or mentholated flavor? The answer would be like, no. I mean, unless they're using menthol flavor. But if you say to a kid this year, are you using an iced flavor? The answer will most likely be yes. And so iced flavors are mentholated flavors mixed with a fruit or candy flavor. Those are the ones you see: iced blueberry, iced mint, which is like mint, menthol. So if you don't ask the right questions, you risk getting really important answers. We hear from parents every single day. We hear from kids. We know what's out there because we have parents everywhere. And that's why we give webinars about what are the latest products to look for? What are the latest flavors? And, our goal is to be sort of translational, is like making sure that that information gets to the right people and is communicated broadly so that, for example, when we're, talking to, on national partners calls, we're working, talking to people at the CDC and saying like, this is the new product or this is the new issue, because the tobacco industry shape shifts so quickly. And if we don't get ahead of that, they'll be, 20 steps ahead of us before we can turn our heads. I mean, that's how this youth vaping epidemic essentially happened, right? I mean, isn't it that when I was young, everybody already knew in the 70s or the 80s that tobacco would kill you. People already knew cigarettes were bad for you. They could kill you. And so I think the perception after the Tobacco Master Settlement was that the public health community had slain the dragon, only to discover with Juul's opening of this public health Pandora's box that we have not yet been able to close, in large part because the FDA, through its Center for Tobacco Products, has not fully regulated these products since 2016, which is really just an incredible shame and a lost opportunity to shut down this youth vaping crisis. But as we like to say, big tobacco messed with the wrong moms. They're not going anywhere, but neither are we, because our organization is here for the long haul. We feel we've proven the proposition that parents must always have a seat at the table when it comes to educating about and fighting against youth tobacco use.
As Meredith said, there is power that comes from being able to explain the science behind a growing problem. As practicing clinicians, health educators, researchers, and advocates, each of us has the power to impact the youth vaping epidemic. Connecting with organizations like Parents Against Vaping is a great way to start. On the upcoming October 24th to 25th, Parents Against Vaping is holding their annual Clear the Vapor conference. It is hosted virtually and it's free to attend. Clinicians are not only encouraged to attend the conference, but are invited to connect with the organization, to speak at the event, and share your experience and expertise. There are many other ways to get involved with advocacy efforts targeting youth vaping. If you are appalled by Meredith's story of how tobacco companies have been sending their own representatives into schools, consider yourself the antidote. Reach out to your local middle and high schools and find out how you might help. I recently did just that by partnering with a primary care physician and spent the day talking with hundreds of middle school students about vaping in a rural community in Southwest Virginia. I'd be happy to connect with you to share some ideas, including visuals and videos that we used. By leveraging our networks, our medical training, and our experience, we should each feel empowered to advocate for the changes needed to help young people in our communities live their healthiest lives and avoid the hazards of vaping.